Tracy Crow is the assistant professor of creative writing at Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida, and the nonfiction editor of Prime Number magazine. But 35 years ago, she joined a group of women who were becoming United States Marines. It was not a large group. Even today, in 2012, only 6.2% of the United States Marine Corps is made up of women. So you can imagine how rare it was when she did it in 1977. She's written a memoir of those days called Eyes Right, Confessions from a Woman Marine, and I've invited her to join me here today on the Big 550 KTRS. Hi, Tracy. How are you?
Hi, Paul, and hi to everybody in St. Louis.
How small were the numbers of women when you joined?
Well, if I remember right from the figures our drill instructors gave us during boot camp, it was something like a total of 9,000 women Marines to 199,000 men.
Wow.
Right.
Why did you join the Marines? I know, having looked at your book, that you came from a home filled with alcoholism and domestic violence. Did you look at the Marines as an escape?
No. I didn't look at the Marines as escape. I looked at the Marines as salvation, in a different form, I guess you might say, of escape. I was looking for something to save me. I wasn't looking for a place to go and hide. I was just really looking for a place that had structure and rules and boundaries that, just those really solid boundaries that I seem to have lacked throughout this very abusive childhood.
Now, women weren't allowed to go to Marine combat training until 20 years after you joined. 1997 was the year they were allowed to do that.
That's correct.
So when you joined the Marines, what did they tell you you would be doing?
Talk to most Marines. Well, let's put it this way. Back in 1977, you didn't get a whole lot of information. What the recruiter told me I was going to be doing was I was supposed to become a dispersing clerk. Now, dispersing in the Marine Corps and in the armed forces in general means that you're going into the banking side. In other words, you're going to help process payroll and deductions and things like this. And so in my mind, I thought, well, that's wonderful. And then in 4 years, I'll get out and I'll try to find a job at a bank somewhere. I'll have all this training. And what they didn't tell me was that that's what they call military occupational specialty. That was one field of dispersing that also included supply. So I ended up in supply warehousing.
To get there, did you have to go through any kind of boot camp?
Oh, yeah. I went through boot camp at Parris Island, the whole thing that you can imagine, back in 1977, which was pretty tough. We didn't have that combat element that women today have to face, but it was still very tough. I mean, it was a very foreign world for somebody from Roanoke, Virginia, at that time, who had never even flown on a plane before until I went to boot camp. So it was a very foreign world and full of discipline and military rigor and all sorts of things, completely foreign.
And full of men who, many of whom I'm guessing didn't want you there.
Yeah, that was still a real shaky time. And one of the things that made it so tough for women of my generation was that just the year before I joined in 1977, the regulations changed that allowed women who became pregnant, those women who were married and who decided to have children, the regulations suddenly changed and allowed us to stay in the Marine Corps. And so that didn't make things any easier. I mean, imagine this. All the women before my generation had to make a conscious choice of whether they were going to choose motherhood or military service. And for those who had chosen military service and given up all those fertile years and dreams of having children, they weren't real happy with us as we were pregnant in the Marine Corps. And the men commanders, that just put them over the top. All of a sudden, they now had to deal with pregnant Marines. They just blew their minds.
Yeah, but even the women who weren't pregnant on the base weren't treated as equals, right?
Not all the time, no. There were certainly pockets of places in which I feel women were treated somewhat more equally. I think in my field of public affairs, which is where I ended up when I was able to finally make a transfer out of supply, I chose to go into public affairs to become a journalist. And I would have to say that in my world of public affairs and journalism, we were probably treated as equally as you would hope that a woman could be treated. I'm not saying there wasn't the whole harassment or some of that, that some of us did face. But I'm just saying, if you looked at it from the standpoint of, say, women in the motor pool or women in aviation, or women in some of these other fields, we certainly had it better in public affairs than some others did.
In fact, you say in the book, despite the personal challenges I had overcome, alcoholism, self-loathing, laziness, I could never defeat the signals my body sent the world.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, let's see how to put this. I have a very definite hourglass shape. And when I've always been teased about the way I walk, the way I look from behind. And so no matter what uniform I had on, it just seemed to accentuate the worst possible things that it could accentuate for a woman who was trying to fit into a man's world. Does that make sense?
It does. So were you being hit on all the time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I'm not alone. I mean, most of us were. But, think about it. There were, 9,000 women to 199,000 men?
Mm-hmm.
So, of course we took a lot of hits.
Might be a dream situation for a woman who's trying to find a guy.
Well, one of my favorite lines when people ask me out of the blue, why on earth did you join the Marine Corps? And I wish I had a dime for every time somebody had asked me that. My favorite line is to just come back and say, because I was looking for a few good men. But obviously, you've seen the book and read through some of that, and you realize that's really not the reason that I joined the Marines.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Tracy Crow, whose memoir is called Eyes Right, Confessions from a Woman Marine. When you did get involved with guys, you ended up marrying a Marine officer, and you talked before about the pregnancies that became a new part of the Marines with your generation. In your case, you had two miscarriages and a stillborn child. Did that cause problems for you, both personally and professionally?
Certainly personally. And I think the reason I say personally is because I did not really allow myself a grief period over any of those situations until I'm going to say probably about a good 10 or 15 years later when I finally started thinking about all of these and even experiencing a few emotional flashbacks, that I would say would be related to trauma. I mean, you don't have to be in combat to be suffering post-traumatic stress disorder. And we obviously associate it with that, and I'm not trying to diminish that in any way. Please understand that. But I'm just saying that it was sometime many, many years later before I started to reconcile the level of grief that I never allowed myself to experience, because you just soldiered on, or in my case, marined on. You just picked up and went on.
Is that because you couldn't allow other people to see that side of you?
Absolutely. Let me try to give this context. We were so few women then that, and even now, the dynamics really haven't changed too much in the Marine Corps, maybe in other services, but, in terms of ratio of men to women, but women today are just generally more accepted overall because of the length of time that women have now been in the Marine Corps, even since my era. But in my day, in my generation in the 1980s, if you did something negative, it seemed to be exactly what men wanted to latch on to say, that's why women shouldn't be in the Marine Corps. They can't take care of their children. They have these miscarriages, and then they're out for X number of weeks. That's why we can't have them in the Marine Corps. So the added pressure of just moving on, get over it, suck it up, keep going, was just so ingrained in us because we didn't want to let down each other and to have that sort of thing, brought on to us.
How different is that for women now?
I don't know that it will ever go away, really, Paul. I mean, seriously, I think that in a sense there is always going to be an element of that for women. I do think that the services overall, Marines included, from what I'm hearing in the chat rooms and the personal emails I get, are really working much harder at this thing of relations between men and women and eliminating so many levels of the sexual harassment. I think that a lot of inroads have been made, but in terms of women still feeling they have something to prove, when you're that outnumbered, I think you can't help but feel you still have something to prove.
We talked about your marriage. We talked about your marriage to another Marine officer and the problems that you had through those pregnancies. But that wasn't what led to the end of your Marine Corps career. That was an affair you had. with a prominent general in the United States Marine Corps. You were both threatened with court-martial, and at that point you, well, I don't think you ever become an ex-Marine, do you? Or in your case, because of the way it ended, do you consider yourself an ex-Marine?
Oh, no, no, no. Don't you dare try to label me the ex. No. You know, there's a running joke in the Marine Corps, and this is a very bad joke, but there's a running joke in the Marine Corps that you're never an ex unless you've assassinated a president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a horrible, you know, statement to make, but that's how solidly we feel about that X terminology. No, I'm a former Marine, and even though things ended the way they did under what I feel were less than honorable conditions, I still received a quite honorable discharge. But I don't, you know, I don't know how much you want me to go in and kind of give away those things, but let me just back up a second and say the fact that I was an enlisted Marine who married an officer was already the beginning of this serious set of risk-taking that I ended up experiencing and in doing throughout my 10 years in the Marines. An enlisted person is never supposed to fraternize or marry an officer. So not only was I taking a huge risk, but so was my husband in marrying me. And we were both threatened with career problems throughout our entire marriage, and we were, so we both had to overcome those challenges as well. So then when we separated in the summer of 86, we went through a three-month separation, and that's when the affair that I had with General Hopkins began.
What happened to General Hopkins? You, as you say, were discharged. What happened to him?
Well, after I chose the route I did to save us all from a very humiliating public court-martial, I was saving my husband, my family, because my husband and I by then had reconciled and were quite happy. And I just wanted this thing to go away for him, for the Marine Corps, for General Hopkins. And so General Hopkins actually ended up pinning on a second star. And he was quite instrumental in orchestrating the very successful ground force combat operation in the first Gulf War. So in a sense, I felt that the sacrifice had been all worth it.
You felt it was worth it? You don't think it was unfair?
Let's put it this way. I was just answering this question for a book reviewer, and you know, about if I felt that it was unfair. And I answered it kind of this way, and I'm still working on this answer and how I really feel. If I knew then what I know now, I would probably have a very long, serious talk with that 28-year-old self before she jumped on that grenade.
The book
about abuse of power and about accountability. I'm not saying she still wouldn't jump on the grenade,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just saying I would have a serious talk with my 28-year-old self about abuse of power and accountability.
The book is called Eyes Right, Confessions from a Woman Marine, Tracy Crowe, former Marine but never ex-Marine.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much for joining me here today.
You're welcome. Thank you.